This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And it's Monday. Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Did you have a good Thanksgiving? I did. I got to see my kids in Kansas and great big turkey and the stuffing and all that fun stuff. And now we're back to work and lots going on in Washington, D.C. Congress isn't back from holiday weekend. And you know, there's a lot on the agenda, much that Republicans want to get done before the end of the year. Well, we're going to talk with Congressman Drew Ferguson of Georgia about tax reform and a few other things. Looking forward to having him on here in just a little bit. And this week, listen to this. Arkansas schools will see In God We Trust posters in every classroom. The lawmaker behind the legislation, Representative Jim Dotson, will join us to talk about the national motto. And abortions have reached an all-time low. Chuck Donovan, president of the Charlotte Luzier Institute, it's the education arm of the Susan B. Anthony List, he'll be here to break down the numbers. And of course, we'll take your calls. And just a reminder, we continue our FRC year-end matching challenge through the end of December. Any amount you donate to FRC receives a matching gift from a generous donor. In this broadcast and FRC's work depends upon you, our supporters, who truly care about the future of our nation. Donations can be given at tonyperkins.com, and your gift will be doubled. You give 10, it turns into 20. You give 50, and it turns into 100, so on and so forth. And you can also make a gift by texting FRC to 444-999. That's 444-999. Well, Congress returned to work today. It's a crucial week for Republicans and citizens, frankly, in regards to tax reform. There are 12 days left on the legislative calendar, and time is running out for the historic legislation that's being proposed. The House passed its version of tax reform legislation on November 16th, 227 to 205, if you recall, and the Senate plans to hold its own vote later this week, which would be followed by a conference to reconcile the two versions. Well, with us now is Congressman Drew Ferguson. He serves on the Committee on the Budget, Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and Education and Workforce Committee, and he is from the great state of Georgia. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you so much for having me today, Russ. I hope you and your family had a wonderful Thanksgiving that I know I certainly got to enjoy some time with my family and reminds me why it is so important to do the things that we're doing in D.C. right now.
Amen. And I do. I enjoy Thanksgiving. It's one of my favorite holidays and just getting together and doing the things that are important, which are being with family and friends. Well, you're on the committee on the budget, and you're really in the weeds on this, on the tax reform. So much going on. Do you think we're going to get this done before Christmas?
I really do believe that we will, and here's why. The House and the Senate and the White House have been working on this legislation since the president was sworn in, and the House, in fact, has been working on this legislation for probably more than a decade, getting prepared for this moment in time when we had this historic opportunity to push this type of tax reform through that America so badly needs. So there's a lot of unity in the House. There's a lot of unity in the Senate. I certainly do not view this as a House bill versus a Senate bill. Mm-hmm. I view this as two great bodies working on behalf of the American people, and we're going to get a chance to get a bill through both bodies. And as you said in your opening remarks, get it to a conference where we can reconcile the differences and get it to the president's desk so that he can sign it and deliver a huge win for this nation.
Now, the House GOP bill does not, I believe, repeal the Obamacare mandate, which requires most people to purchase health insurance or pay a penalty. And what's the Senate doing with that, and where are we at with that dynamic?
Well, it's my understanding that is included in the Senate bill. I think that Senator Rubio really pushed hard on that. And that is they pay forward to double the child tax credit, mm-hmm. which I think helps somewhere in the neighborhood of about 45 million Americans. So I see that as a huge win for several fronts. Number one, we don't want the federal government penalizing us if we don't buy mandated insurance product.
Right.
And number two, anytime that we can help 45 million families with additional money in their pocket. I think that's a good thing as well. So I'm optimistic that it's in the bill. I would love for a chance to vote on that in a reconciled bill as a member of the House.
And is that how it would work when it goes to the Senate and then that conference comes together?
That is correct. So the House is, as you know, we passed our bill before Thanksgiving. We expect the Senate to pass their bill later this week. And then we have to go in and we have to hit a specific budget reconciliation number of $1.5 trillion in savings over the 10-year budget window. And in order to do that, we're going to have to take the really good things in the House bill and the really good things in the Senate bill and merge them together so that we hit that number, so that we meet the instructions to satisfy the Senate parliamentarian, which is a little convoluted way of doing it. But we know that we are not going to get any liberal progressive Democrats to support this legislation. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we have to do it with Republican votes. And I believe that we will get it done.
Yeah, I think that's just a given. Help us understand why some of the blue states are concerned about the elements of the tax reform. We're hearing about some of these lawmakers in the blue states.
Sure. There is a provision in the House bill that removes the state and local tax deductions and up to a limit of $10,000. So for everybody that is able to deduct up to $10,000 for state and local taxes, they're actually, this is not going to affect them at all. Some of these very high tax states like New York and New Jersey and California and Connecticut, their lawmakers have always been able to hide behind the federal tax code to say, oh, we can raise your local taxes as much as we want, because you get to deduct them. And, well, this is going to begin to hold those state officials and local officials in those states accountable. Here's what we know. Even with the loss of that deduction, with the increase in the standard deduction to $24,000 for a family of four and the lower rates, even most individuals in those states are going to continue to see savings in their pockets, which we know will happen. If you happen to be making over $1 million a year living in New York State with a ridiculously high tax rate and a ridiculously high state income tax rate, you may get hit a little bit on that. We still think the vast majority of Americans are going to see a huge benefit with this.
Mm-hmm. Now, it just makes sense to me. Doesn't higher taxes hold back economic growth? That just seems to make sense to me, but it doesn't to some.
Russ, there is no question that when you tax corporations, whether it's a small business, like my dental practice that I used to operate mm-hmm. before I came to Congress, or a major corporation like Caterpillar, if you tax those corporations at a high rate, those taxes are passed on to consumers, and it slows economic growth. If you reduce those taxes, then the corporations can offer products at a lower price. More importantly, with this tax code and the changes that we're making, they're going to be able to make investments in their people and their equipment and machinery based on their needs, not on the provisions in the tax code. And we think that's a huge win for America because it puts us at a competitive advantage on the world stage. It will make this the greatest place in the world to do business, and we will see capital from around the world flow into the U.S. to further stimulate the economy. So you're exactly right. Cutting taxes and reforming the code simultaneously will have a profound positive impact on our economy.
And on another note, I was just watching a press conference. Director Mick Mulvaney, he's settling in this the Consumer Watchdog Agency Office of Management and Budget. That's kind of interesting today.
Well, I'll tell you this: you're talking about the right man at the right time for that job, and that is Mick Mulvaney going into that. And here's why: Mick Mulvaney knows how unfair that particular organization is. Number one, it was ruled unconstitutional by the federal courts. It has no government oversight. This is a government bureaucracy in charge of itself, and there is nowhere in the world where I can see that is a good thing. So having Mulvaney in there until we can get Dodd-Frank passed in the Senate, which we did in the House, and get the thing completely dismantled, having Mulvaney in there to basically pare it down is the right thing to do. I'm excited about him being in that position because I know that he is going to minimize the impact of that bureaucracy on American families and American consumers.
Now, I see just before Thanksgiving, you introduced legislation. I've got four kids, so I kind of this caught my the headline on the student loan repayment plan. Tell us about that.
Sure. This is something, and I've got four children as well. One in college, one daughter serving our nation proudly in the United States Navy. And I've got a junior in high school who will be going through the college application process next year.
Right.
One of the challenges that we have with our student loan program today is it's very complex. There's so many different repayment plans. There's so many different repayment options. And here's the problem. None of them encourage the student to actually pay down principal and pay down their debt. They just pay a little bit of loan until they reach a certain point, and then the loan is forgiven. And that's not right. I don't think the loan borrowers actually want to do that. I think most people want to do their part to pay their loan back. So this simplifies the process. After a 10-year period, it's income-based, based on 15% of your income. And at the end of that 10-year window, the interest stops and you just pay down principal. So that protects the taxpayer. It gives the student borrower the opportunity to quite candidly make significant payments. And that certainly helps, in my opinion, that will help drive down the spiraling costs because colleges know that kids can borrow beyond their means to repay without penalty. And so we're trying to do things. We understand that students need to borrow money to go to college. However, we've got to make it fair for them on the repayment end, and we think that this bill does that.
And I'm reading here that borrowers across the country hold about $1.4 trillion in student loan debt. And in the past 3 years alone, over 500,000 of those borrowers have defaulted. So I would say there's probably a need to help people find a way to pay those loans off.
Yeah, we've got to do this in a more fair way. It's not fair to the borrower. It's not fair to the taxpayer. It's not fair to our education system. And so we've got to change this. And look, we're a nation that is $20 trillion in debt, Russ.
Mm-hmm.
And we have such a huge amount of our money that is spent before it ever comes in the door on the mandatory spending side. So if you qualify for any number of government programs, that money has to go out. Student loans kind of fall into that category. So we have to get a handle on that. And I think what we're doing with tax reform to grow our economy at a significant clip above what we've seen for the last 8 years, if we can do that and we can rein in the mandatory spending and reform these government programs like student loans, we stand a chance of being able to pay down that $20 trillion in debt.
Absolutely. Well, Representative Drew Ferguson of Georgia, thanks so much for being on Washington. I have one more really critical question.
Yes,
what bowl game is Georgia going to go to?
I am confident that we are going to make it into the national playoff scene. and we are going to beat the Auburn Tigers in a rematch this Saturday at the SEC Championship in Atlanta.
Well, that sounds like a prediction. I live in Oxford, just 5 minutes from Old Miss, but I went to Mizzou. All right. Thank you, sir. Talk to you later. Up next, we'll talk about In God We Trust in Arkansas schools.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC and our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. A senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Well, welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. This program's powered by the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C., and Tony is the president of that organization. It's a pleasure to be back with you here again today. Well, Arkansas school districts are beginning to roll out In God We Trust posters in their classrooms after a state law passed in August allowed the national motto to be displayed in classrooms. Now, Act 911 was sponsored by Representative Jim Dotson, during the 2017 Arkansas legislative session. The legislature received support from the Republican Party. Representative Dotson represents District 93 in the Arkansas House of Representatives, which includes portions of Benton County, and serves as co-vice chairperson of the Arkansas Legislative Council. Representative Dotson, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, tell us, how did we get here with this In God We Trust motto going into the classrooms?
Well, it started off with a House bill back during the legislative session toward the end of March, called House Bill 1980, and filed that bill toward the end of the legislative filing period. So we have a bill filing deadline, and actually filed the bill on the bill filing deadline, and of course had lots of stuff going at that time with thousands of bills having been filed and trying to read and go through the process, and took a couple of weeks, but got it in front of a committee, and I think there might have been one question, but and then it was all in favor and got out of the committee without any objection. Then it went on to the House floor, and I don't remember there being a single question on the House floor. It passed the House 78-1 and went on to the Senate, passed overwhelmingly there by a vote of 20-2. And on April the 5th, I believe it was, the governor signed it into law as Act 911, which took effect August 1st. It was a fairly simple bill, one page or so in length that basically talked about the display of the national motto in our public buildings in the state of Arkansas, and didn't provide any money or resources, but it required that the building administrators shall put up and display the national motto, In God We Trust, if a frame copy or a durable poster is provided to them to do so. And so right now we have organizations all across the state. Locally here in my hometown of Bentonville, the American Legion is leading the charge and is collecting resources, donations, and whatnot to purchase frames and buy posters to put in those frames and then give to the public buildings. Part of the bill actually stated that elementary and secondary education buildings, so K through 12, it had to go in all the classrooms and libraries if they were donated to them. So, so we're talking about, you know, tens of thousands of frame copies or durable posters stating "In God We Trust" with a picture of the American flag and the Arkansas flag accurately displayed as part of that display. And they have to put it up.
So if no resources were provided, then it sounds like there are groups and organizations, maybe even churches, are coming alongside and adopting Absolutely. This in their area. Is that right?
That's correct. There's, you know, it's sort of grown organically in some areas. There's churches from all across the state that have designed some of their own. I've been working with the American History and Heritage Foundation, which has designed a poster, and it's 11 by 17 poster that looks really sharp and clearly, you know, big bold white letters says "In God We Trust" with an American flag and an Arkansas flag underneath it, and has those available for either folks to purchase or to contribute. And if any of your listeners want to contribute to the cause, it's AmericanHistoryAndHeritage.org. They can go to and each one of these posters, I mean, it doesn't take very much to print them, but the frame itself costs $4 or $5, depending on where you buy it. So for $5 or less, really, you can put one of these in either a classroom or in a public building, which includes all of any public building maintained with state funds. So that includes not only your county and municipal buildings, but also higher education buildings and whatnot throughout the state.
Now, this is the state of Bill and Hillary Clinton. How, I mean, known as a blue state. How did this happen?
Well, we're a red state now. they've been gone for a long time.
Right.
So long and short of it, in 2013, I was actually elected in 2012 and took office in 2013. And on the day I took office and got sworn in, the state flipped from blue to red. We went from having been a solidly controlled Democrat state since Reconstruction, 138 years, the legislature had been controlled by the Democrats, to the day I got sworn in, I was one out of 100 House members. There was 51 Republicans. So we took over the majority in the House and also in the Senate. 2 years later, won the governorship, and since then we've enacted quite a few very good conservative and good government type laws throughout the state.
Well, Representative Dotson, well, good for you. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are really pleased to hear about this. We're out of time. I appreciate it. I'm sure you've had some pushback and you're fighting that. But thank you so much for being on Washington Watch. We applaud your efforts. Well, coming up next, great news. Abortions are at historic lows. We'll talk with Chuck Donovan, president of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, with the Susan B. Anthony List. He'll be here when we return. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, filling in for Tony Perkins, and this is powered by the Family Research Council.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. Learn more at frc.org/internships.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You can find Tony on Twitter at T Perkins. At T Perkins, you can find me at Russ Jones Speaks on Twitter. And of course, all of this great content can be found on the web at tonyperkins.com. Well, abortion rates in the United States have fallen to an historic low, according to the latest data compiled by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. This is great news, folks. And here to help explain why is Chuck Donovan. He's the president of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, the education arm of the Susan B. Anthony List. And now he served as legislative director of the National Right to Life Committee more than three decades ago. And he worked as a writer for President Reagan. He helped to lead the Family Research Council for nearly two decades. Director of the Chuck, welcome to Washington Watch.
Russ, great to be on with you.
Yes, it's a pleasure. Kind of like old home week, isn't it?
It is. Good in time for Christmas. I spent many a Christmas at FRC.
Now, you know, I have to admit, I didn't know the CDC kept track of these kinds of numbers, and I was kind of diving into these, wasn't aware they tracked the numbers, and the decrease in sexual activity apparently among teenagers for declining, maybe a reason for declining abortions. There's other reports that say that activity has increased. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, my experience in working with numbers at Family Research Council and elsewhere is there are usually multiple contributors to what's going on. But let me tell you, I mean, the big picture is very encouraging. It's, if you go back to 1980, when the abortion rate decline started in the United States, it's been fairly steady with some steep declines, and actually we're in the middle of one of the steeper ones. And I don't think there's a single thing that can explain declines in 50 states over a 40-year period. But I do think it is far more likely that what's happening is a shift in attitudes, that abortion is actually the taking of human life, that there are alternatives to it. The pregnancy center movement has grown. As everyone points out, I think positively and truthfully, you've got the ultrasound images now everyone has seen. It's a staple of advertising everywhere, from Doritos to Volvos to whatever else is out there. And I think people are choosing life more frequently, and that is certainly the lead reason. You can't discount other factors, though. Teenage pregnancy is down. There may be changes in contraceptive use in certain states, but it doesn't explain everything. I think there's a lot going on. Most of it's good.
Well, continuing this decline in the last few years, there were only 12.1 abortions per 1,000 women of childbearing age in 2014, compared to 19.4 per 1,000 in 2008. So apparently that's the largest decrease, and it was seen among pregnant teenagers, with the abortion rate of young girls declining 46% since 2008. So, you know, I think you hit the head there squarely that pro-life groups have found better ways to connect with this generation and have found better ways to maybe market even. I hate to use that word, but it really, you have to find ways to connect, don't you?
Well, I think you do. I also think there are things going on that perhaps should worry us a little bit, Russ, because as you know, coincidentally with changes on this front, there are changes in the institution of marriage. And when you look at the Center for Disease Control's numbers, you have something like only 14% of abortions occur among married couples. The highest percentages now are not teenagers, consistent with what you just said.
Yes.
They're occurring on 20-somethings, and actually the second half of 20-somethings, where ordinarily women would have been married and men would have been married a generation ago, there's a retreat from marriage, and I think that's contributing to keeping abortion rates higher than they otherwise would be. Married couples don't, it's not that they don't have unexpected pregnancies, but they typically expect, if you will, to be able to cope with life stresses. I think they do a better job of it because they know they have mutual support. So that's one of the things keeping the abortion rate as high as it is, and it's still too high.
Mm-hmm. Well, earlier this year, the pro-abortion group Guttmacher Institute, they even admitted pro-life efforts are contributing to the decline. So that's something when you've got a group like that admitting it.
Well, they have to admit it, really. If you look at the macro level, and I ranked all the states in the CDC report, you look at the bottom 10 with the lowest abortion rates in America, and you're not seeing the states with saturation, family planning, and abortion coverage. Down at the low rates of something like 1/6 of the level of New York and California, you find states like Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kentucky, Nebraska, these are states where there's cultural pro-life and also pro-life legislative activity. And these things just simply can't be discounted. One of the main reasons why an abortion rate is low is that there aren't any abortion clinics, or there may be one or two, and they're very much unpopular with the public.
And I mean, aren't there other countries all across the world that actually just see this as an atrocious kind of procedure, but yet here in the United States, it's continued to be practiced?
Well, that's certainly the case. At Lozier, we did a study of international abortion policy, and we identified 7 countries worldwide that allow elective abortion, that's abortion for virtually any reason,
right,
after 20 weeks of pregnancy. We're one of only 7 that do it. Canada is like us, and for the same reason, court ruling, and the other 5 include North Korea, China, Vietnam. So we're in bad company, frankly.
Well, Chuck, thank you so much for being on Washington Watch. We're at the end of our segment here. Thank you so much for your research, helping us understand the numbers. We've been talking with Chuck Donovan, president of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, part of the Southern B. Anthony List. Thank you so much, Chuck. Well, when we come back, we're going to go to the phone lines. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. I want to hear your Thanksgiving stories.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? And are you looking for an internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain an invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that is frc.org/internships.
Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
Isn't that a great song?
It's beginning to look a lot
is it beginning to look like Christmas yet, or is it still too early? I know there's some of you, you know, you've still got like 3 weeks. You're just like, you're stressing me out, right? Well, welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Washington Watch is powered by the Family Research Council. And as I said at the top of the show, we continue our year-end matching challenge through the end of December. If you donate $10, it turns to $20. You know, we have a generous donor, and every donation is doubled and matched, which really helps us out here on this broadcast. And helps us to continue to bring you top-level guests and newsmakers and people that know what's going on. Donations can be given at tonyperkins.com. Your gift will be doubled, and you can also make a gift by texting FRC to 444-999. That's 444-999. Well, let's go to Isaac in Texas. Give us a call. I want to hear your Thanksgiving stories, really. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Isaac, welcome to Washington Watch.
Howdy, thanks for having me.
Yes.
Hey.
What's on your mind?
Well, there were two things. I do have a Thanksgiving story, and I also do have a statement, though, regarding the tax reform bill and its impact on graduate students. So mm-hmm. I'll talk about that first. Now, first, I do actually, like, being a conservative and a Republican myself, I voted for Ted Cruz, but I do actually think that there are certain components of the tax bill that are that should be looked at. That being how there are certain universities that in which the tax bill would negatively impact graduate students, in particular PhD students. I'm a father and a husband with wife and two kids, trying to left teaching, try to go went back to graduate school, about to get mm-hmm. my PhD, and this goes through. I don't understand the majority of it. I haven't read the material, but apparently there's a good chunk of graduate students who could wind up paying up to $8,000 in income tax. And the majority of graduate students make somewhere between $10,000 and $20,000 annually. And we work like 60 hours a week. It's nuts, mm-hmm. you know. So I do think that this thing does need to be looked at, that it would negatively affect that particular portion, because mm-hmm. most graduate students, after we get our PhDs, we're generally making much higher incomes, and we're right. able to pay more taxes right. afterwards.
right.
But it's just during that time, we're like at the poverty level. So I do think that needs to be looked at. But overall, I do think it's a very good bill, though. Now, Thanksgiving story. Let's see. We were able to have a very, very nice Thanksgiving. Just the family on Thursday. On Saturday, we had Thanksgiving with relatives, and it was just really, really nice being able to carve our turkey. It was one of the first years where we were able to have a sit down Thanksgiving with the whole family. My wife was able to make a whole turkey, and I was able to carve it.
There you go.
Myself, it was awesome. Really, really nice.
Well, that's great to
hear.
Very
blessed.
Well, Isaac in Texas, thanks so much for calling Washington Watch. You know, I got to go through the same kind of joy. My son had his first Thanksgiving under his own roof, which was very fun, and got to have a father-daughter dance with my daughter, who got married and had a reception. And wow, you know, it just melts your heart, and just good things, good memories, great opportunities to be with family and friends. Let's go to Daniel in Louisiana. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch.
How you doing, sir? Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying I had a great Thanksgiving with my family, my wife and daughters. My wife actually made some turkey the day before Thanksgiving, and the day of, we got together with my sisters and my parents, and it was wonderful. Yeah, we just had all the good traditional food for Thanksgiving.
Do you have any political conversations at the table that got a little heated?
No, sir, not that I can remember. No, nothing.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's a good thing. Well, Daniel in Louisiana, thanks for calling Washington Watch. You know, it's such a good opportunity. You know, sometimes life gets so busy, we get so crazy that we forget or we don't take time to be with our friends and our family and just to slow down and to allow opportunities for conversation. And you know what I like is to hear the stories of the generations. As a culture, we've lost the art of storytelling. And that's, you know, our Jewish roots of the Christian faith. You know, that's what they did. The Hebrews, they told stories and they passed them down over the generations. And I love hearing the stories of my grandmother and my grandfather and aunts and uncles. And that's how we remember our roots. You know, it's kind of funny. I grew up in Kansas City, and we were driving through Kansas City, and I told my wife, she's not real big on the barbecue and all that, but I wanted to stop at Arthur Bryant's, which is on Brooklyn Avenue on the other side of downtown, on the east side of downtown in Kansas City. And I grew up eating there, and it just got me reconnected to my roots of growing up in Kansas City, and they've got great barbecue, by the way. So it's just an opportunity for us to do good things and to reconnect with our family. Let's go to Deborah in Oklahoma. Deborah, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? Happy Monday.
Thank you very much. It's been very, really nice here in Oklahoma. So it's beautiful. I was calling about Thanksgiving.
Yes.
I was invited to a friend's house, and there were about 10 of us. But my friend, she was sick, and she's usually one that cooks everything. So me and her sister-in-law and her son and his girlfriend, we all pitched in and went into the kitchen and giggled and hunted through the drawers and tried to figure out how to make gravy with gluten-free flour. And she had prepared for us at dinner rocks on the table where she had earlier in the week written a word and then on the opposite side put a verse on there. So we each had a verse to read.
Now, how cool is that? So there were rocks on the table, and on each rock was a scripture.
Right.
And what did you do with the rock?
We read each one, and then she allowed each one of us to bring them home if we wanted to.
And did you talk about the scripture?
Yes, we did. We all talked about them. And one particular person, he was a little quiet most of the time. But his word was contentment. And once he read the scripture, he said, oh, this is what I needed. And he said, I'm taking this home before, you know, before anything. So that was really neat. At, towards the end of the time I was there, she came out of the bedroom and spent about 10 minutes with us.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so she said, you know, I've listened to you laughing and coming together to put everything up. And she says, I just want you to know that God just gave me a joy to hear all of that. So
it was what a great story.
It was a wonderful day. So
what a great story. Well, Deborah in Oklahoma, thank you so much for calling Washington Watch. We appreciate that. Hey, let's go to Mitch in my home state, the show me state of Missouri. Mitch, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. I and my wife are so grateful this Thanksgiving season. We have 20 grandchildren between us, and of course we pray for them daily on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Most of them don't know the Lord, and so of course we pray for salvation. And I just wanted to share that 3 weeks ago, a 15-year-old grandson accepted the Lord. We were told on Thanksgiving Day, one of his cousins, a 13-year-old grandson, accepted the Lord the previous Sunday. And yesterday, I have a son-in-law married to my youngest daughter who accepted the Lord. We've had three salvations in a matter of 3 weeks, and I am forever grateful and just praising the Lord for it.
A triple blessing. Where in Missouri are you?
Well, we live in a little town called Wright City. It's about 60 miles northwest of St. Louis.
Yeah, yeah. Was just through that area. Not your town, but St. Louis anyway. Well, that's a great story. It's always a blessing to hear when folks come to the faith. And it's, I know it's especially important to you to have your own grandkids in 20. That's a good number there, Mitch. Well, thank you so much for calling Washington Watch. You're listening to Washington Watch, and I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. 72-7234. I saw this story I wanted to share with you. A church in Sweden advocating for more inclusive pronoun to refer to God. The Church of Sweden adopted a new handbook last week. Encourages clergy in the church to stop using solely masculine references to God. The new handbook does not completely remove this masculine program, a pronoun. In one example released by the church, the language reads, God, Holy Trinity, Father and Mother, Son and Sister and Brother, and Spirit and Lifeguard and Inspirator. You know, there's nothing biblical about that. And there's seminaries teaching this, and it's dangerous. You need to watch out for it. Let's go to Arkansas. Duena, are you there?
Yes.
Did I say that right?
You did.
All right. Well, happy post-Thanksgiving, and now we're around the corner and heading towards Christmas, and glad you're here.
Well, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to, first of all, Thanksgiving, double blessing because I got to celebrate my healthy dad's 80th birthday also. Mm. But I wanted to talk about the tax plan. The child tax credit sounds like such a good thing, but I see all the time parents who use their kids to support them, and I get real perturbed at what we call tax refunds when people have not paid in, and then they get big piles of money back that us that are working hard do pay in. I think they need to make sure that nobody gets more of a refund. I don't know how you'd call it a refund if you haven't paid it in, but than what they paid in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, families that may make under $24,000 but then get, you know, $10,000 of our tax money because they have all these kids, that's just wealth redistribution, and
yes, part of the
I'm
welfare.
Concerned about that.
Part of the welfare program, and very good point. And I know some of our more conservative legislators are looking into those dynamics and aware of those dynamics. And you make a great point. Thanks so much for calling Washington Watch. Well, let's go to Alina in Louisiana. Did I say that right?
Yes, it's Alina. I had a conversation with my family over the holidays, and my cousin, my husband's cousin, was talking about how she wasn't going to get her son vaccinated anymore because the vaccines, a lot of them have aborted baby fetal cells in them. Mm-hmm. And it really disheartened me. And you can even look it up on the CDC website, the ingredients, and it tells you that there is aborted baby fetal cells in mm-hmm. them. And it's just really disheartening because, funny, I'm a health inspector, and it's something that we look for in our health inspection sometimes, and to make sure they're getting vaccinated. And it poses such a big dilemma for me, because I'm a Christian and I believe, right. I don't believe in abortion, and I don't want to, mm-hmm. at this point, I feel like I don't want to do the vaccines, right. but I know I feel like it's also might be putting my children at risk.
Well, you're not alone. You're not alone in that debate. And I know, you know, it's interesting. Younger generations are looking at that pretty closely and have concerns about vaccines, yet at the same time, don't want their children to be exposed to deadly diseases that have taken out generations of people in the past. But at the same time, they're doing a lot of research. You know, I've got 4 kids and I hear them talk about this all the time. It's kind of interesting to hear them talk about the vaccines and their concerns about possibly causing autism and maybe even being root of cancer. So it's an interesting journey that we're on right now as people are trying to look at the health concerns of vaccines if you take them, and the health concerns of vaccines if you don't. And then you've got a whole strew of challenges of getting into schools and whatnot, right? If you've done your research, you know, they want to see your proof of vaccination.
It's one of those. It's just a hard dilemma, and it's I have my 4-year-old. She's due for her 4-year-old vaccines, and they want to vaccinate me because I'm immune to the rubella vaccine, but it's dangerous for my pregnant. I'm pregnant, yeah. and I'll be due in April. And
congratulations.
So yeah, it's a lot.
Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing. It's great to hear those stories. Let's go to Steve in Iowa, the Hawkeye State. Steve, you there?
Yeah, proud to be a Hawkeye.
Oh, there you go. Welcome to Washington Watch.
We were excited, had a good Thanksgiving. Grandpa and Grandma had passed away in the past 5 years, mm-hmm. and Grandpa lived in one house. He was born in a house and lived even after he was married all his life, and so they're in the process of selling it. They got it all cleaned out except for the shuffleboard that he had made and the pool table that he had downstairs. And so we had a shuffleboard and pool tournament with multi-generationals of people mixed together. We just drew names for who your partner would be and had a lot of fun remembering times in that house. And
yeah, those are good memories, and they're important to have, to keep those traditions going in your own family. Steve, thanks so much. Pete in South Carolina, I'm sorry I didn't get to you. We're out of time. You've been listening to Washington Watch, and I'm Russ Jones, been sitting in for Tony Perkins. And this from 2 Timothy 1:7. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Blessings on the journey.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.